You're listening to The Food Talk Show, produced by Channel Radio. It's The Food Talk Show, with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue, how are you?
Hello, it's very, very hot again.
It is.
28 degrees outside.
It's blistering. You wouldn't know it in here because it's nice and chilled in here, isn't it?
It's very chilled in here. And obviously, just to make sure, because it's hot outside, we have some beer to taste. Ice cold beer.
Oh, that was lucky, wasn't it? How did that happen?
It was very lucky.
How on earth did that happen?
I'm pretty pleased about that. I am pleased about that.
Yeah.
We've got Anne Milden from Wompsum Brewery. So we're going to be tasting some of that stuff. And we haven't had this before, I don't think, on the show, Paul. We've got Will from Billy Frank's, who make jerky. It's lots of different names for it, but jerky is sort of the American name. Have you had that before?
Jerky? I have. I'm actually, I've always called it Biltong.
Biltong, but I'm
a bit of a fan, actually.
Well, you've got loads to taste, because in front of me you must have at least 12 packets of all sorts of different things. So that will keep you going.
Absolutely. And he's got some really devilish names on them, hasn't he?
Some very, very, very hot stuff as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got, Wompsum Brewery and Billy Frank's, who make jerky. We've also got Lucinda from Longevity.
That's not easy to say, is it? Longevity. I had to read that about four times.
And that's a vegetarian and vegan restaurant. And she's going to be explaining stuff about her pesto pasta. And that's on We Hate Heston. So we've got loads of stuff to talk about.
Fantastic.
I popped into this micropub last weekend.
As you do.
I just wanted to talk to you about micropubs.
Yeah.
Because you and me are both business people, so I was quite interested in what you thought about them in terms of the sort of, I don't know, the business model, really. Because we've talked about microbreweries, but obviously this is micropubs. And they're really beginning to come into their own. And I quite like this idea. So the one near where I live used to be a barber's shop.
Right.
So it's quite small.
Yeah.
And basically they have sort of about three or four guest beers. And they're always different, these beers. You know, they source different beers. And once they've run out, and they get another one that's completely different. And if you want wine, they have red, white or rosé. Organic, but that's your choice.
They've pushed the boat out a bit. If that was me, I'd just have red or white. And if you wanted rosé, I'd just put a bit of each in a glass.
Yes, probably. I think somebody's mum makes cheese straws, and that's the only food they have.
Yeah.
And there's just one room, one toilet, a tiny little sort of back room, literally almost like a corridor where they just store the beer. And it's regularly rammed, I would say, on Friday, Saturday and Sunday lunchtime. I would say about 20, 30 people in there.
Right.
And I think if you're going to keep your overheads low, maybe that micro pub is a half decent model.
It's interesting, isn't it? As a non-drinker, I kind of just look at this from a completely different angle. It's an interesting phenomenon because traditional pubs have been closing at the rate of 26 a week for a couple of years now and going out of business, or have been converting themselves into restaurants that happen to sell alcohol. So you've got those two things. The interesting thing about micro pubs or single units like that, it's very similar to Ireland. If you go out into the countryside in Ireland, every shop's also a pub.
Yeah.
The post office is a pub. You know.
I love going to Ireland.
Yeah. But
I just love it.
And I was saying to you, when I was a kid, and I know I'm really old and all the rest of it, when I was a kid, I grew up in a village called Bearstead, which is just outside Maidstone. And when I was really young, it was still a very tiny village. But we had nine pubs in the village. There were almost as many pubs as people. But there was one pub called The Plantation, and it was a real old throwback pub because it had its own hop field. They grew their own hops, brewed the beer from it, and then they served it from pitchers on a trestle table.
Farm to fork, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, that would be how beer was originally done, or pubs were originally done, or inns were originally done 400 or 500 years ago. And we're almost heading back towards that kind of approach. I own a business in Canterbury, and right next to me is a place called The Foundry, which is a brewery and pub all in one. So you go into the pub and you can watch them brew beer. What you're talking about, a micro pub, which is this single room,
it's supposed to
where you just go in, drink a couple of pints of beer, munch on a cheese straw and leave.
I mean,
it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, there is apparently now a micro pub association, and they say a micro pub is usually a small local shop converted into a free house consisting of one room, with their key ideology being somewhere where they listen to their customers. They mainly serve cask ales. They promote conversation. Mm. And they shun all forms of electronic entertainment, and they dabble in traditional pub snacks. And that's their definition of a micro pub.
Mm.
And interestingly, the one we go to, if your mobile phone goes off, you get fined £1.
Right.
Nobody's allowed to talk on their mobile phone.
Mm.
And they don't have any slot machines or any of that stuff going on. And do you know what? It's lovely going in there,
I was going to say, I can imagine, you know, what you're trying to tap into there, if you'll excuse the pun, is an aficionado market, isn't it? It's a bit like the organic food market. What you're after there is someone that's being discerning about the beer they're drinking, and they want to go somewhere to drink the beer. Yeah?
Yeah, I don't think it's just that. I think quite a few of us are getting really annoyed about people who are incredibly selfish and talk at great lengths on their mobile phone very loudly as if what they're talking about is of any interest to anybody else. I'm looking at you there, Paul.
What are you trying to say to me? Hold on a minute, my phone going.
Yeah. But do you know that sort of complete and utter selfishness where people don't realise there's other people trying to enjoy themselves?
Sure.
Or my one pet hate at the moment is going to a restaurant and somehow a family think it's perfectly reasonable for their kids to run around.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and annoy everybody else and not sit at the table.
Yeah.
And which I think is, first of all, I think it's bad manners, but, you know, is it because children aren't taught to sit down at a table to eat anymore? I don't know. But it's such a relief to go into a micro pub where none of that's allowed, because often children aren't allowed in there.
Yeah, sure.
And that promoting conversation, that's great, isn't it?
Well, what you've recreated there is the old public bar of a pub, isn't it?
The sort of place my granddad used to go. We used to smoke then, didn't you?
So exactly.
Have a fag and a pint
with
your
mates. You basically walk into the bar, which had no carpets or anything on the floor or anything. You'd stand at the bar and you'd chat to your mates and you'd drink a couple of pints of beer and you'd smoke a few fags.
Yeah, that's right.
And then you'd go home and have your dinner.
Read the Racing Post and then you're off.
Exactly.
Place a bet on the way home.
Yeah.
That'll be it, really.
Talk about how rubbish Liverpool are and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, we're allowed to say that, aren't we, today? Yeah. Because Will Yates here is a Liverpool supporter.
Yeah, someone's got to be.
I'm afraid to admit that both Paul and I are Chelsea supporters. Is going to get a hammering on that one. I'm just going to give you a quick few little facts, Paul, and then maybe we could have some music. But the first ever micro pub opened in Herne Bay, which is in Kent, in 2005.
Wow.
That seems really recent. I thought they were around for much longer, but anyway.
Oh, interesting.
By the end of 2014, there were over 100, and now there are around 200. They're expected to be about 800 in the next couple of years.
Hmm.
Interesting to see if it works as a model.
One of the things I like about a lot of the things that are happening now is that people are experimenting with different things. So you've got micro pubs, and then you've got the pub brewery type thing. Have you also come across the Freewheel Inn, which is a cycling pub?
No. Where's that? Is that a Kent pub?
It's at Sea Salter.
So that's on the Kent coast, yeah.
And it's on a cycle trail. And it is a cycle pub. You can actually go in the pub, you can buy beer, you can buy food, and you can get your bike fixed.
That's a good idea. Yeah, people are getting into niche markets, aren't they?
It's niche markets, and it's small local niche markets, and I love that. I think that's really brilliant. I think the actual overall phenomena is to move away from this pile it high, sell it cheap, mass-produced, big stuff. That's where we're going.
Well, we're obviously going to talk to Wantson Brewery and Billy Franks in terms of not being mass-produced. Do you want to play some music before we speak to Will Yates of Billy Franks?
I've got some cheesy tunage for Will.
Have you? Is this specifically for Will?
This is specifically for Will.
This will be terrible.
Well, what do you reckon? Hold on.
What is that?
Hold on. It's the Capitals. Cool Jerk.
Who could it be? 'Cause I know I'm the heaviest cat me like I'm a fool. Deep down inside, they know I'm cool. I said now the moment of truth has finally come. When I'ma show you some of that cool. Now give me a little bit of drum by himself there. Now give me a little bit of bass with those 88s.
Oh, jerk.
Jerk, jerk. Right, so shall we try some of this jerk stuff? So if you're not sure what it is, basically jerky is normally dried salted beef, which is trimmed of fat. It's cut into strips and then sort of dried. Sometimes a bit of salt's added and sometimes herb and spices. I remember eating something very similar to this in Zambia and South Africa. And as you said, Paul, they call it biltong.
Yep.
But in Ethiopia, it's called kwanta. Mm-hmm. It's called bakwa in China. Dendeng in Indonesia. In India, it's known as apu kandam. So a similar product is made and sold in Italy called kopiete. This was originally made with horse and donkey.
Really?
Yes. But now it's mostly pork, thankfully. Mm. However, most people know it as jerky, and beef jerky is the most popular, particularly in America. It's a $1.5 billion dollar industry in America, and sales are up 49% since 2009. And jerky first purpose was to provide a way for Native Americans to bring protein-rich food on long journeys. And we are joined by Will Yates, who's from Billy Frank's. In fact, just explain the name before we start munching onto the jerky.
Yeah, come on, Will.
On the jerky.
So as a kid, I grew up in the States, predominantly in Texas. And my name's William Francis Yates, and whenever I was a naughty boy, which on a seldom occasion, and my mum and dad would scream Billy Frank at me. So
that's where the name of the company
blocked
comes.
Blocked it out. Well, yeah, I blocked it out in the back of my memory, because if I ever heard it, I knew I was in trouble.
I see what he did there in Texas. So he was Billy Bob, Billy Franks.
Well, yeah, I think Billy that's Franks. Why it kind of just jumped at me. It's a sort of Texan, you know, cowboy sort of name. And
And you've started this company that makes gourmet dehydrated snacks. And your jerky is made and hand-sliced in East London with spiced traditional grass-fed native bred cows, which is really good to hear. And I know you've grabbed 1 and 2 stars, respectively, in the 2015 Great Taste Awards. And you have been stocked in Rick Stein's Cornish pub.
Yes, his son Jack has been a sort of ambassador for the product since we met about 4.5 years ago.
And why did you start making this? I'm going to taste your first one you give me here while you're doing that.
Which one's that?
A little bit. It's going to take me a while to. This is the Texan barbecue British beef jerky. While I'm just giving this a go, can you sort of tell me how did you start making this?
Yeah, definitely. So it's a good one. Flavour to start with. So as I said, I grew up in Texas. First 10 years of my life were in the States, and it's kind of a staple diet. And then in 86, moved back to England when I was 10, and you know, I couldn't find beef jerky anywhere. Don't think anybody here had really ever heard of it. So anytime someone was going on holiday or my dad was on a business trip, that's what I'd get them to bring back. Wherever they went in the world, like as you mentioned, South Africa, I'd get them to bring biltong, or Australia, or get kangaroo jerky or crocodile jerky, emu.
Whatever.
Exactly.
Whatever's going. I'm tasting this, the Texan barbecue. If you can hear lots and lots of chewing in the background, it's Paul because he has no manners.
Mm. That is fabulous. I'm really loving it. I've no idea what it is, but I'm really loving it.
This is the Texan barbecue beef jerky, and it's probably their best selling one.
Yeah, definitely. Will said, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it was like one of the first ones I started doing. As I said, I couldn't find it in England. So when I did find it in the shops, it was a kind of mass produced, heavily saturated in sugar and not that healthy. So I just started making it for fun and taking it into work and giving it to friends. And
it just took off from
there. Organically grew from there. It was never supposed to be a business. But
so where do you get your meat from and how exactly do you make this one we've got here? This is the barbecue.
So most of the beef has always come from a supplier in Cornwall called Philip Warren's. And they use probably over 120 Manistic farms around Cornwall and Devon. And lately, as our business has grown and we get more and more meat, we have a second supplier now. We're based out in Essex and they supply restaurants in London. Again, it's still, you know, indigenous breeds, grass-fed cattle. And we get the meat. It's kind of, you know, taken off the bone and stripped of its skin and fat. So I'll get the cut of meat and then I butcher it down into slices. I make a wet marinade. Marinate it all day or all night in the fridge and then put it into trays in a dehydrator, which draw all the moisture out at a low temperature for about 8 hours. And I lose 60% of the weight that goes in. So for every kilo of meat, I get about 400 grams back. But it's very different to biltong, whereas biltong, they dry the whole cut of meat over days and then slice it up when it's cured. Mm. So mine's a kind of reverse.
You do it the other way around.
Do it the other way around.
What do you think of that, Paul?
What?
Mr. Barbecue. No,
what he just said or what I've just eaten?
What you've just eaten. Well, both, actually.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I was fascinated. I absolutely loved the jerky. My initial thought about it was how real it tasted. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, that's what it's all about for me, is the quality of the beef.
Because at the moment, you don't find much biltong or jerk about that isn't mass-produced. You know, you go into pubs and they started selling it in pubs on these strips.
Yeah.
And you could be chewing plastic.
It's just shoe leather.
Yeah, it has no taste at all. Whereas that tasted real. You could tell that somebody had made that, and you could tell what they've made it out of as well.
Yeah,
and it was a good snack.
I don't use any refined sugars; just a little bit of honey or maple syrup, depending on the flavour for the sweetness. Whereas most of the mass produced, the second ingredient is normally demerara sugar or apple juice or something.
Yeah.
And if anybody's not had jerky before or biltong, then it looks. I'm really sorry to say this, Will. It looks disgusting, really. It looks like a piece of, like bark. It looks like a piece of burnt bark.
I was going to say flattened rabbit poo, but go with it.
Yeah, and so it doesn't look particularly appetizing, but it's because it's dehydrated. Mm. But it's all in different sorts of shapes, and it'll be very dry when you first put it in your mouth. But the whole point of that type of food is that once you get your saliva going,
it then releases the flavor, and it
releases everything. And I'm now having just eaten my first piece, I'm now getting some really nice flavours still left with that barbecue stuff. And it's not mass-produced barbecue.
No, it's not.
Lots of different spices in there.
That's exactly what I meant. It is real. You know, you can tell that that's been handmade, or you know, it's not a mass-produced product, and it's a real product. And it had a really nice taste, and I want to eat the rest of it.
Yeah, I'm lined them up for you. You have to wait.
I can't reach, though.
I have to describe each
What she's done, listener, is she's lined up three lovely pieces of jerk meat there on the top of my desk here, and they are just very marginally out of reach of my hand.
I do that on purpose. Mm. Now, I know you do lots of different flavours. Now, I'm a bit of a purist when it comes to mixing and matching stuff. So my worst nightmare is, you know, you go for a pizza or whatever, and there's some chicken tikka pizza, and I just hate that stuff. Now, I'm being really rude here. You've got, because it is it National Burger Day today, you told me?
Today is
National Burger Day. You have got a cheeseburger flavour.
That's my Willy Wonka
piece of jerky here.
Yeah.
So do you want to try that, Paul?
I do.
See what you think.
You'll get the layered flavours. You'll get the sort of, if you close your eyes,
I'm fundamentally against this before I tasted it.
Be transported back to maybe your first sort of, dare I say it, like a McDonald's cheeseburger, but you'll get all the pleasure of a cheeseburger without any guilt because it's so healthy.
It does. He's mad. Yeah, it does. It tastes.
You'll get a pickle first, and a sort of ketchup and mustard, and then right at the end.
How did you do that?
The cheese tank. Well,
Can you taste it?
Well, so far I'm getting dill pickle, which sounds bizarre, but I am.
I gotta have a pickle on a burger.
That That's a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yeah. So the cheese I use is organic white cheddar powder. So it's all, you know, as natural or organic.
I really don't know what I think about that.
Do you like this, a dirty cheeseburger?
Not really, no. Well,
that's probably why you're not enjoying
it. Not as sure about that one. You've also got a sort of fiery chili fajita, roast beef and mustard, sweet and sour. And then you've got something called Christ on a Bike, which is very, very hot. Which I'm going to pass over to Paul now.
Oh,
it's
good.
The hottest one.
I'm loving
asked
this.
Him. This is the hottest one he does. So
it's
here you
actually
go.
The Holy Mother of God that he's got. So it's even hotter than the Christ on a Bike.
Oh, so is that the one I've just given him?
Yeah, that's the
okay.
One.
So you can do that.
They're very similar.
Can I try your fajita one?
Absolutely. So the fajita one is, I do a collaboration with a company called Chili Company. We do a lot of, been going around for a couple of decades now, bringing authentic sort of Mexican spices to.
Jeez, whoa.
Don't swear on
that. No, that hit me, that did.
Is that really hot? You like very hot stuff.
I do.
It's
we've had really hot things on this program. I have never seen him do that.
It is hot, but it's not the sort of heat that'll kind of put you off. People will grab another bit to chew and extinguish the fire. And it's almost going to make it twice as bad, but
this is brilliant. And it's a balance of speaking.
Scotch bonnet and naga chilies. And there's three flavors I do all with hot sauces from a friend of mine, Mark, who's the rib man in London. He does fantastic street food, and then he came up with these hot sauces, and we've worked together since day one, since my first ever batch of jerky. So
there's water leaking out of the corner of my eye there.
If I just describe it, all his eyes are all red rimmed. It looks brilliant.
I actually enjoyed it. I actually did enjoy it, but it caught me. But it did catch me.
I've just had the fiery fajita. That's good.
Leaving aside the flavours, the consistency of the beef is what's really getting me, and what I'm really enjoying. It's a substantial snack that is eatable, if you see what I mean.
It's a survival snack as well.
Yeah,
so it's
But you can see why people invented this kind of food. Yeah, as opposed to the stuff that you normally buy at the moment.
I really like this. I'd definitely buy this now if I saw it in a pub or something. Because for me, this with some, we're going to have that later, nice ice cold beer, some sort of IPA would be really lovely.
Absolutely.
So I'm really sold on it. Not so sure of the cheeseburger flavour, obviously. But I've just had the, I'm just tasting now the turkey jerky. Explain to me about turkey jerky as opposed to beef jerky?
Yeah, so when I was, you know, my previous life working in an office where people would bring in cupcakes or whatever they make at home, I was bringing jerky in for my team. And there's a friend of mine, Baljinder, who's a Sikh and couldn't eat beef and always looked rather upset when everyone was munching on this new jerky I was bringing in. So I decided to make some just for him, basically the turkey jerky. And then as the business grew, that came along with it.
If anything, I prefer that, actually.
Yeah, my fiancée.
I think the texture's nicer, well. Yeah. I think the beef is a very manly snack. This one's quite nice. The texture's different, isn't it, Paul? This is buffalo hot wing flavour.
I can't speak about it.
No, it's nicer, isn't it?
No, I'm too for it.
No.
I quite like the turkey one, but I'm sold on the beef. That I would, if I saw that in a pub or a shop, I would buy that in anticipation of having an enjoyable snack.
It pairs, like as I said, it pairs with beers and drinks as well as post-gym snacks as well. The protein levels on it are sort of, you know, off the charts compared to anything else because of the lack of sugar and lack of carbs.
And if anybody's on a low-carb diet, this is a good one, isn't it?
I mean, you look at supermarket-bought jerky, and I've seen a latest one that's out there, not to mention any names, but the sugar and carbs are actually higher than the protein content in it. Which is, for me, is unbelievable.
Well, that just shows what's in it, though, doesn't it? It's not actually jerky, is it? It's not beef, that's for sure. Mostly. Must be other things.
I've just caught myself helping myself to some more. I wonder why that is. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have eaten and then
I'll tell you what, it's really difficult to speak when you have it. I'll speak while you're doing that. I know you advertise bespoke flavours on your website, Will, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I've done a few collaborations.
Quote on your website, it says, Want some bespoke jerky tailor-made for your needs? Get in touch. We have done Japanese pork, minted lamb, horse, as well as various beef flavours not available in our shop.
It's true.
What is going on here? So people can say, can you, obviously, and there was a certain batch size, but people can say, yeah, I love this type of flavour, will you make me some?
For restaurants or, you know, one-off pop-ups and stuff like that. So the horse jerky was during the whole, you know, the Tesco's lasagna scandals. Yeah. Oliver Payton at the National Portrait Dining Rooms did a horse banquet with a starter of horse tartare and a roast haunch of horse. And they asked me to do a kind of appetizer, I guess, for the diners. So I made a bag of nag and I made some horse jerky.
A bag of nag.
Yeah. And it was served, I made, you know, bespoke packaging and everything, and it was served on silver plates, platters, which had a bed of hay and then the bags of jerky, and we gave them to the diners. And it, you know, it just tastes like beef, really.
Yeah.
And horse meat does.
I'm just going to go over to Anne, and Anne's just had a little chomp of a couple of bits. Her mouth's completely full now, isn't it? She won't be able to speak. I really think that the beef jerky in particular would go very, very well with a nice ice cold IPA. Have you got any thoughts? What did you think of the beef jerky?
I think they're all fabulous. Turkey, not so much. That actually seems to be chewier than the beef.
Does it? I've preferred that slightly.
Yeah. But yes, I can certainly see how, you know, these could definitely be a good snack to sit along a pint from the bar.
Mm. Is it ever going to replace crisps?
Well, in the price range, no.
No, different.
Although, having said that, I've seen some expensive crisps lately.
I so love this. Paul, you can't speak on the radio when you're chewing and coughing.
I think there's room for both behind the bar. You know, crisps and...
Of course,
not
yes.
Chewing and coughing.
No, not chewing and coughing. Yeah, I think the thing with crisps is cheap and it's salty. This, if you were hungry, crisps are just I don't know what they are.
They're empty. Don't really. That's empty. What I was trying to say before I choked.
Whereas these are really
crisps
chunky.
Are just rubbish food, empty calories that are exactly. Just there to do, you know, put salt in your mouth. That is a food group to a large extent. You know, it is food, and you could use that not as a whole meal, but certainly if you hadn't eaten for a while, it's got some substance to it.
Imagine a bunch of lads or females after midweek five-a-side football, and they go for a pint, and before they go in for the tea, and
or instead of tea, almost. I notice on your website you also have something called magic jerky dust.
Oh, the magic jerky dust, yes.
What is that?
It's basically, so I did a street food competition a few years ago to come up with the best topping for a hot dog. And the final, the pièce de résistance of the topping was I blitzed up leftover bits of jerky into a fine powder and just dusted the top with it. So it's kind of like a garnish or a... You can actually buy it in the States. It comes in sort of chewing tobacco round pots, and it's just beef powder, basically. So it's where the jerky's just been blitzed up into a really, really fine powder.
And where can people get your stuff from? They can go on your website, I believe.
You can buy it online.
Billyfranks.co.uk.
.co.uk. Or you can pop into any of the Whole Food Market stores in the UK. Selfridges Food Hall. Source Market. Mostly... places in London that retail.
Yeah, but you can get it online.
Had a few of the BrewDog bars nationally as well.
Okay, that's really good. And just to emphasise again, you know, when you see like pork scratchings and stuff, packets of things like that on the bar in a pub, or you do see things like jerky, I just immediately won't buy those things because I just think they're full of rubbish and mass produced and awful. These have got 1 and 2 stars in the Great Taste Awards, which are very, very, very well respected. And I have to say,
I loved it.
I like them. I'm not so keen on the cheeseburger one, as I said, but no, I do like them. I like the barbecue beef jerky one.
I kind of suspect that's a bit gimmicky as a flavour.
The cheeseburger one?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just decided.
And why not? Yeah.
Got to try it.
Yeah, I just wanted to. I mean, the reason I have so many flavours is I just enjoyed coming up with the recipes.
And why not? You know, and that's the nice thing, isn't it? There's a whole range of different things. And different flavours. But the nice thing about all of them is the consistency of the beef that you're eating them with. That's, you know, for me.
I mean, the cheeseburger
and
one
well-sourced,
is about...
And well-sourced beef. Yeah.
The cheeseburger one is more about, you know, being able to have that, if you like a cheeseburger. But as I said earlier, you know, all the pleasure without the guilt of it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
So, billyfranks.co.uk. Just to have some jerky with some beer would be pretty good. But should we have a little pre-record first?
Yeah, we got a bit of We Hate Heston, have we not?
We have. Emily, one of our producers, went down to see Bagham Barn Antiques Centre. Doesn't sound like it does any food there, does it?
It doesn't.
Just sells antiques in a barn. And this is in a place near Canterbury, so quite near the Wantsome Brewery. And this is a vegetarian and vegan restaurant. And they've made a vegan-friendly pesto pasta, which tastes incredible. And the pesto is made from avocado and macadamia nuts.
Right.
And Lucinda from Long Vegety, who I really struggle to pronounce that properly, is going to tell us all about it.
Let's hear from her. Hmm.
Lucinda, how are you today?
I'm really well, thank you.
And I hear that you're going to make us something really tasty.
Yes, I'm going to make an avocado and macadamia nut pesto pasta. And the pasta's also gluten-free, so for those who are gluten-free.
Okay, so it's a gluten-free pasta. It's also vegan, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Brilliant. And so Long Vegety, this is a cafe in Chilham?
Yes, it's part of Bagham Barn Antique Centre, but we sell vegetarian and vegan food, all freshly prepared.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'm really looking forward to trying this pesto because I've not had any lunch today. So how do we get started?
Okay, so I've got some water boiling and I'm just going to add the pasta to the to the boiling water. Here, add a little bit of salt. And I'm adding roughly around 450 grams of pasta, and this recipe should serve between 4 and 6 people depending on their appetites.
Okay, we'll see how many people I am.
Okay. So in the meantime, I'm going to get on with making the pesto. So I have about 60 grams of macadamia nuts ready, and I'm just going to take out a fry pan and I'm just going to quickly toast these.
So macadamia nuts, they're quite an expensive nuts. Is there any reason you're using them?
I'd run out of pine nuts, decided that I had macadamia nuts in the cupboard, substituted them, and actually I preferred it. It tasted creamier.
Okay.
So, you know, might as well, if it tastes better and it's cheaper, might as well go for.
Why not? I mean, could you use any type of nut, really?
You could do, yes. I mean, I often make a mixed nut pesto because, you know, you end up with all these little bits of nuts in different packets. There's no reason why. It's all going to be ground up. Just put them all in together, fry them off, put them in the food processor, and yeah, you can use any nut.
It's a great way of using up your leftovers as well.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. So these are just going to toast gently on a moderate heat?
Yeah, you just need to keep an eye on them because you don't want burnt nuts.
Yeah.
Right, so while they're toasting, I've got my food processor ready and I've got some basil.
Again, any reason you're using basil?
No, well, I mean, traditionally, I suppose a lot of recipes ask for basil, but there's no reason why you can't add parsley or coriander and have a play around. There's no set rules. Use up whatever herbs you have. So if you've got lots of little herbs around, put them all in together. I'm just going to give these a quick rinse. Right, so as you can smell, these are beginning to toast.
Yep, so, they smell lovely.
So,
So the macadamia nuts are in the food processor. You've got, two big handfuls of basil there?
Yeah, I'm just tearing some of this off. I'll put that in. I haven't quite used all of the basil, but I've used a big handful. Now I'm going to add the avocados. So these should be ripe. I tested them yesterday, but just by pressing the skin, it should give a bit of a give. And
there's supposed to be a trick where you take the little nib off the end and the colour behind it is supposed to tell you whether. So if it's brown, I think it's supposed to be.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. But I don't know if that's true or not.
We'll find out. So, there we go.
Oh, they look perfect.
And you're wanting About two avocados.
So are we using avocado in place of oil or as an extra?
We're going to add a bit of oil, but not as much as you probably need.
These are quite large avocados as well.
Yeah, they are.
So it should give you quite a good amount of nice fat.
Yes.
And a lovely vibrant colour as well.
It will. But we're going to add some lime juice to prevent the colour going brown. Because avocados, when the flesh ends up in contact with
oxygen.
They turn brown. So we're going to add... You can use... I've got lime today, but you could use lemon as well.
So any citrus juice?
Any citrus juice. I'm not sure how orange would taste, but yeah.
Rather exotic, I imagine.
Yeah, maybe. But, you know, if anyone wants to try it and let us know. I'm sure how new recipes get invented.
So it's one avocado in. We're just going to scoop out the other one and pop that in. It's a good green-looking collection we've got now, though.
Yes, yeah, so it's going to... Yes, that's what... But it does it. It tastes very indulgent when you taste it. That's one side. I'm just going to wash my hands because I've got avocado all over them, so...
It's quite a messy, but fun, I think.
It is, yeah. And I mean, if you've got children,
yeah,
they'll love that. Just get them to scoop it out after you've cut them.
Well, this is a great recipe, I think, for if you're cooking with children as well, especially where it's the holidays at the moment. It's a really simple one where they can feel like they've made a whole meal, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to test the pasta. Right, I'm going to take that off and drain it. Okay, so I'll go back and do the final bit of the pesto. So I have my lime, which I just cut in half. The lime squeezed.
Good for cleansing, I hear.
It is, yeah.
Right,
that's how we'll mark it on that one. We need 3 cloves of garlic. Again, adjust it to what your tastes are and the size of the garlic cloves. And then I'm going to add a bit of salt and pepper. Not too much because I'll taste it as I go along. Otherwise, you can end up with it tasting a bit too salty.
And it's something you can add at the table.
Well, that's it. Yep. Okay, and a bit of olive oil. Okay, so probably put in about 2 tablespoons just to start off with. As I said, the avocados are creamy, so it will really depend on how they are. So I'm just going to turn this on.
Brilliant. So that's looking really good. It's got a good, like, creamy, pasty texture to it.
Yeah. To me, that needs a little bit more salt and a little bit more olive oil. So... I'll add that, and then I'll let whoever's eating then decide for themselves whether they want more salt or not.
Obviously, the thicker it is as well, less far it would go over pasta. If you make it a little bit wetter, then obviously you can coat your pasta more easily.
Well, that's it. And some people might also want to add, this doesn't have any dairy in. For vegans, if they really want a cheesy taste, they can add nutritional yeast as well. But I would try it first and decide what you want, because it's an optional ingredient that maybe not everyone can get. Mm-hmm. So, right, so now... I'm just going to combine the avocado pesto with the pasta, and then I'm going to chop up some cherry tomatoes, and then we're done.
Brilliant, sounds good.
I'm just doing this all in the saucepan. Why create more washing up if you don't have to? But obviously, if you've got friends coming over, you might want to do, you know, transfer it into a nice bowl and make it look extra nice for them. But if it's midweek, you're tired, you've just come in from work, you might just decide to put it all in the one saucepan.
Well, it's a great midweek dinner, or any time. It's quite a simple, if you're feeling a little bit lazy or tired.
Yeah, and also because, I mean, it's got avocado, so it, you know, it's going to be creamy. So if you're wanting something
comforting,
but without all the dairy, then yeah, this is it. I'm going to just put it onto a couple of plates and add some chopped tomatoes, cherry tomatoes. Again, you don't have to. That's just me. You know, I think the red goes nicely, contrasts nicely against the green, and it's an extra piece of veg or fruit, depending on how you class tomatoes.
Another bit of texture and colour.
Yes. It's
a good sized portion.
It's a good sized portion. But as you'll see, there's also lots left.
There is lots left.
So it is a real family dish, or a dish for sharing if you've got people coming over, and it's quick, as you have seen. So now I'm just going to cut the tomatoes, and that's it.
Brilliant. It looks great. It's really tasty. It's very it's very creamy, and it is very satisfying, and I think it's going to be a very indulgent feeling dish, even though it is so simple and all of the ingredients are so readily available. So it's great.
Brilliant.
I think this is a winner for a midweek dinner. So where can we find out more about Lawn Veggie?
Okay, so we have a Facebook page and we're on Twitter, so just look up Lawn Veggie. We're gaining a real following on there. And also we're on Canterbury Road, heading it towards Canterbury. So if you look out for Bag and Barn Antiques, do. And we're on the walking and cycling routes as well. So if you need to pop in for sustenance, then yeah, we're here.
To walk off all the pasta.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Lucinda.
Thank you.
There you go. Pesto of the vegetarian kind.
Definitely. Now I've got these beers in front of me, Paul, and having sort of eaten that beef stuff, and you made me have that chili one in between while we were playing that.
You did that deliberately.
Hit the ceiling.
You did
I'm
that.
I'm ready for some beer, and I'm joined by Anne Milden of Watson Brewery. And they're a gold award-winning small brewery, and they make all these sort of regular ale ales and some seasonal ales. It was started in 2009 by James Sandy, and basically, it's just taken off more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try four today. Welcome, Anne. Why did James start this? He's not really into beer, is he? He's a microbiologist, I think.
No, yeah, James is a chemist. And,
chemist.
When he was, I think when Pfizer's closed down, he got some redundancy money. He spent it on buying a brewery.
And Pfizer's being a big, huge chemical company,
yeah,
in
pharmaceuticals.
Kent that employed hundreds and hundreds of people. And then sort of moved out of the area. So a lot of people got made redundant, didn't they, and had to look for alternative careers. And I guess that's what James did.
I don't know. I think it was a hobby.
It was a hobby. Ah. So, and then he's gone on to make it. So you've parked four beers in front of me here. And there's lots and lots of different ones. Now, everyone's got a very interesting name. So the first one I'm looking at is called 1381. What's the story behind that?
1381 is the year of the Peasant Revolt, led by Wat Tyler and started in Kent. All of our beers actually have a Kent backstory to the name. Mm. So Wantsum Brewery is actually from the name from the Wantsum Channel, which separates the rest of Kent from the Isle of Thanet. And the brewery is effectively where the Wantsum Channel would have been.
Mm. I've just tasted that. It's a very light ale. It's amber colour. Very, very nice indeed. Very hoppy. Quite Kentish, I'd say. Actually, quite distinctively Kentish. And I know I know that Will's just trying some as well.
It's very nice.
So they've all got a story behind them, and that's the brand, isn't it? I mean, if you were to look at the packaging, they're very sort of heraldic, I would say, in terms of, you know, sort of almost like the Middle Ages somehow.
Yeah, our pump clip is and our logo is actually based on the Reculver Towers at Herne Bay, which is one of the fortifications that guarded one end of the Wantsum Channel. So
all history, all history. And how many? You don't call them barrels, do you? What do you call them? How many? Is it firkins? What is a firkin?
A firkin is kind of a half. Half barrel. I can't remember. Yeah. Can't remember my beer sizes now. Yeah. But basically, firkins are the more commonly used size.
Okay, in the industry,
which holds 9 gallons, around 70 pints.
So, how many sort of firkins are you making now?
We tend to brew around 120 firkins a week.
Wow. Okay, that's great.
And so we're brewing three. We're a 10-barrel plant, and so we actually brew three times a week.
Great, and you're now into places like Wetherspoons and microbreweries, and people are taking them to drink at home.
Yes, we do quite well in bottling outlets, bottle sales,
different sort of outlets.
Different. Oh, I can't remember the like delis, Mackinade farm shops.
Okay, farm shops.
Different bottle outlets for our bottles. Predominantly, we're in free houses. And because I'm sort of quite a festival goer, I'm really pushing ourselves into Kent festivals.
Festivals, yeah, definitely. Okay, the next one I'm going to try. I'm hoping that Will's going to join me here. We've tried the very light ale, so we're now going to go on to Hengist again. What's the story with Hengist?
Hengist is named after the Anglo-Saxon intruder who formed the Kingdom of Kent.
Wow.
And that's a 5% sort of golden ale. That's one bronze medal.
That is very nice.
Do you know what Hengist means?
Slightly honey, no.
I do.
Dear.
It's a stallion.
So are you sure?
Yep.
Hengist. Sometimes you say these things and I think you make them up.
Hengist and his brother Horsa.
I know Hengist and Horsa, yes.
Who are attributed as the founders of both Kent and the Anglo-Saxon invasion of England. Actually, both had the same name. If you know you're Anglo-Saxon, Hengist and Horsa are both horses, and the badge of Kent is
it's a horse. Can I just ask you, Will? What do you think of this? This is much darker in colour, isn't it?
But it's still it's a bit stronger.
Mm, nice, like that it's got a nice sort of honey background to it. I think.
Mm.
Quite strong. What do you think? Would you drink that with a bit of jerky?
I'd drink that with probably the roast beef and mustard.
Roast beef and mustard jerky would go rather nicely together. Okay. Now you've got a very, very dark beer here called Ravening Wolf. And again, but that's 5.9%. You've called this strong New Zealand pale ale. I'm going to have a try of this. This looks very nice. What's the background to this?
Well, it's basically, we just use New Zealand hops in it. And Ravening Wolf was the nickname of Odo, who was the Earl of Kent and half-brother of William the Conqueror.
This is very, very, very historic, isn't it, all these?
I'm loving this.
You've got a bit of history.
History lesson in every pub I go to. It's great. Mm. But I still didn't know about Horsa.
Right. Try that one, Will. What do you think of that? I have to say, I'm veering more on the sort of pale. And they're very, very nice. And then finally, we've got something that's almost black here. And that's porter, which is a very, very traditional English drink. And we had Caveman Brewery in, who made some lovely porter. They're a Kent brewer. Tell us a little bit about this one. It's called Black Pig, Smooth Dark Porter.
It actually is based on an Imperial Russian recipe. Mm. And black pigs were the name that was given to the hulls of the Spanish Armada ships, the wrecks.
Right, okay.
Now, I really like porter, but it's a very, very acquired taste. I think a lot of people don't like it. It's got a sort of strong iron thread.
And kind of chocolatey as well, chocolate,
yeah,
coffee.
Bitter coffee, chocolate, but very, very strong. I can't certainly drink more than half a pint of porter because it's pretty strong. Almost. Again, I'm looking for Will's opinion
licorice-y.
Here. You're right. A bit of licorice in there. Could you recommend a jerky to go with that one?
Probably not because it's quite a deep flavour. I wouldn't say the hot, spicy ones. Probably the Texan barbecue.
The normal Texan barbecue, we go with that.
It's got that smoky aromatic, which...
I think on a hot day like today, I think I would be like to be in a pub garden. I'd go for your 1381 Golden, because it's very light ale, nice and cold, with some jerky, barbecue beef jerky. That would be for me, it would be perfect.
I guess, not being an alcohol drinker, so I wouldn't know, but I guess just looking... the colours of the beer that you're pouring there, and your views on each of the beers, that they probably have different seasons where they're more relevant. So something like, was it the porter, the
it's
heavier
very much
beer?
A winter drink.
It's very much a winter beer. Round, I can imagine round a roaring log fire type of beer. Whereas the lighter beers, as Sue said, are probably a pub garden in the summer. Type of beer.
Yeah, very much. I mean, we have basically a core range of sort of 6 to 8 beers that we have all the time, of which 1381 is our biggest selling beer.
Right, okay.
That sort of outsells it is pretty
lovely.
Much everything. And so we have sort of core range, and then we have seasonals, so the porter, which we'd start brewing more in the autumn, and then you brew special beers for Christmas, and we brew special beers for sporting events or for St. George's Day. So, you know, it's sort of ever-changing. So it's, you know, really nice for me when I'm going out and talking to people that I've generally, you know, every couple of weeks I've got some new product to talk about.
Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Can I just say that Will's really making himself at home in the studio. He's almost not quite, you know, put his feet up on the desk there.
And why not?
He's drinking all this beer. He's
knocking
his
back
way
the beer,
through his
eating
jerky.
His own products.
Look at his arms are folded, he's leant back. He's really enjoying himself.
And why not? Why not?
You're not going to respond to that, are you, Will?
I've got a mouthful of jerky.
Yeah.
And beer.
Yeah, perfect.
I think I'm quite close to eating my own weight in but jerky at the moment.
It is good, though, isn't it? Don't you think?
It's very nice.
It is very, very nice indeed.
I may have to mug Will on the way out of the building.
Yes. I was just looking. I know Paul likes a little bit of history, but there's some great names that the company have got, the Watson Brewery. And they've even got Fortitude beer, Paul.
Fortitude.
And that was the name of the plan to deceive Hitler, that the Allies were going to invade Normandy. And all of it steeped in history, and obviously all of the different beers are really well researched in terms of their names and their story behind them.
Well, as you probably know, I'm a bit of a history buff, especially what used to be called the Dark Ages, and we now call politically correctly the early Middle Ages.
Dark Ages sort of suits you, though,
doesn't it? Does,
it
does, yeah.
That's about right.
Bit of pillaging goes down quite well with me. And I love the whole history, and Wantsum as a place has a massive history, even though the Wantsum Channel doesn't really exist anymore. But at one time in history, it was about 4 miles wide. It was a really big river. Now it's hardly a stream. But the whole thing, I love the names. And
yeah, there's some really nice ones around the sort of, obviously, if you look around Dover and places like that, a lot of the sort of aircraft throughout the Second World War, and Wantsum have got quite a few of those. So they've got Thunderbolt American, which is an IPA, and that was named after the World War II Thunderbolts that flew from RAF Headcorn. So really steeped in history, some nice sort of stories behind each one.
Absolutely. So coming back, and you mentioned just now, and we kind of moved on very quickly from it, but I want to go back to it a little bit. You have a core set of products that you produce, and then others that you produce at different times of the year. So what are your main core products?
Well, basically, our sort of core beers are the 1381, which is the light sort of 3.8 session IPA. Imperium, which is more of our traditional Kentish bitter,
right,
with a Kent bullion hop.
Right.
Fortitude is also one of our core range, although that might be changing a bit. Dynamo, which was named to commemorate the 17th anniversary of Dunkirk. Montgomery is actually a relatively new beer for us, and we've been brewing that for a few months, and it was like really, really popular. And we just put it into a competition, and the SIBA Southeast of England competition, which was in July, and it actually won gold medal over 150 other breweries in the best bitter category. So that will now be going into national competitions. So that's obviously going to be one of our core beers from now onwards. And also our Black Prince Mild, which is named after Jonah Kent's husband, who's buried in Canterbury Cathedral. And that's actually won silver at a national level.
Right.
So all good stuff.
So yes.
They do taste very nice, the beers. And actually, particularly the 1381, I really, really like. In terms of your sort of plans, I know you're dedicated. I'm I've just eaten some more jerky. It's gone down the wrong way. I know you're dedicated to growth. Giggling at me. You're going to go for crowdfunding, aren't you?
Yes. Basically, the brewery has actually grown about 30 to 40% in the last year. And we've pretty much outgrown the premises we're in. So we're actually going to be moving in the very near future. It's been quite challenging finding ourselves some new premises that keep us near the Wantsome Channel. But
I presume you want to do that because you want to stay
just to keep the
authentic and
authentic to the name. So we're doing that, and then also we're going to be doing some crowdfunding because we are going to be looking at actually owning our own pub or a couple of micro pubs. So effectively having our own tap room for our beers.
I can recommend Crowdcube. So I got my funding this year.
Was it really? Okay.
Yeah, and I've just moved to bigger premises as well. Mm.
And there has been a history of quite a bit of money raised for breweries and things like that from crowdfunding as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that seems to be, quite popular.
Mm.
And what was your experience, Will? Would you recommend it as a source? Because
absolutely.
It means that you've got investors and you've got to prepare quite big documents in order to make sure. It all sounds like it's all very good and, community orientated, but you do have to get all your figures right, don't you? You do have to prepare all your documents.
Yeah, behind the scenes, a lot of back and forth. But, rather than have a whole small pie, I'd rather have a slice of a bigger pie.
Sure.
Yep. And get the investors and shareholders involved.
And the sort of choices you have, I presume you can either borrow money on these crowdfunding sites or you can give equity away, which means you give part of the ownership of your company.
So with Crowdcube, I think there's two options, like a bond sort of thing, which you cash in after X amount of years.
Mm. Yeah.
And you don't actually own a part of the company.
Yeah.
Well, what I did was, the equity bit. So I think we gave about 35% went up for grabs.
Yeah.
And we got about 186,000.
Right. And that really makes a difference, isn't it, to a company? So many people we have here, and it's a conversation that we're always having, Paul, isn't it? That how do you go the next stage?
Absolutely.
Crowdfunding might be an
absolutely
option.
I just wanted to ask, Anne, do you export at the moment?
We don't, no. We have predominantly just been a Kent-based brewery.
Mm.
And since I've come along, we've actually started with James Sandy, actually moved back into pharmaceuticals and moved to Oxford. So we did actually now do a fortnightly run into Oxford.
Right, okay.
So kind of do Reading and kind of the southwest of London up to Oxford run once a fortnight. And now we're also expanding into, we've got somebody who's marketing a product in Cornwall, Devon and Cornwall.
Wow.
So we ship it by pallet to him and then he distributes. Cool. And also up into East Anglia. So we're getting far more national.
So you're starting to spread.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Very much.
Brilliant.
That's good, isn't it? That's really, really good.
Mm.
And if you want to know more about Wantsome Brewery, you need to go onto wantsomebrewery.co.uk. So that's WANTSUM, Wantsome Brewery. And you can find out all about it there and where to get hold of it. I'd recommend 1381, particularly like that.
Absolutely.
And of course, we know that you need to go onto billyfranks.co.uk if you want to taste that really amazing jerky, which is very low in carbohydrates and blimmin' tasty.
Absolutely.
Blimmin' tasty. Can I just make a little call out here, Paul? I know you haven't got long to go. If anybody's near Hythe, which is in Kent, Hythe Life magazine, I've got a food fair on over the bank holiday weekend. So it's August bank holiday. They're on Sunday and Monday, Sunday 29th, Monday 30th of August. 45 producers and all sorts of things going on there. And there's demo kitchen. I'm going down. And if the weather's nice, cool, all free samples. Marvellous. Just like doing this, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, of course, we also had the lovely Lucinda from Long Vegetee. And if you want to know anything about any of the people that have been on the programme, we'll get links to their websites. You need to go on to foodtalk.co.uk.
Absolutely. So, there you
go. Lovely, lovely. I feel a little bit full up now, which is weird, because I haven't actually eaten that much, but it's really tasty, that jerky.
It is filling, and I have snaffled a packet that nobody noticed. I've got it over here.
Well, you think you've hidden it, but we can all see it.
Yeah.
We can all see it.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, very good indeed.
Can I make a plea? I'm a bit of a student of Anglo-Saxon, and the Anglo-Saxon have a phrase, which is weird bith for lalid, and that means destiny is inexorable.
What does inexorable mean?
Inexorable means it's going to happen no matter what.
Okay.
So you're going to succeed no matter what.
Absolutely.
And I'd love it if you'd name a beer weird. It's
weird.
An Anglo-Saxon word. W-Y-R-D. Weird.
Weird.
Seriously, go for it.
That's just weird kind of beer. Magical, isn't it?
Yeah,
weird beer.
Weird beer. That's
weird
what you
beer.
Need. Yeah.
I think that Will needs to make a recipe for weird jerky. that's exactly fits right in with his brand.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed
so we
it.
Sort, we sorted the, their new products out.
Yes. We will collaborate.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You need to collaborate.
Cool.
Anyway, that was good. Really good. Enjoyed that.
What a fabulous show.
Yep.
Thank you so much to Anne. Thank you so much to Will. Want some beer and Billy Franks.
Yep.
Billy Franks jerky.
Lovely.
Yeah. Cool. We'll be back with you next week on the Food Talk Show. With
See
me.
You then. See you then.
With me and Sue.
See you then.
Cheers.
Bye.